At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
True or false? Tim, this is going to go to you first. Rachel Reeves this week said her plan with the new budget is to stop rewarding idleness. Those exact words. She's going to stop rewarding idleness. So this is towards all the benefit claimants. You think that's true?
That sounds true. Yes.
No. I don't think she'd be that verbose. I think, I don't think she said that. I think she thinks it. I think she believes it, but I don't think she'll have come out and said it.
It sounded a bit too Tory.
Even they wouldn't be that outrageously, you know, in your face. I think, you know, Liz Kendall's saying everything for her, isn't she?
I must say I've stopped listening to her, so I don't really know, but I think it's true.
The answer is it's true. Tim, what?
No!
Yeah, she's become a conservative. I do hate turncoats. My coat's beautiful.
Wow.
Whilst wearing red.
No, there he was. Well, I don't think I don't think politics is predicated on colour.
Okay. We can go into the racism in the United Kingdom if you want on that one. Question two, Sal. Trump this week compared Zelensky to a baby Yoda.
After the last one, who knows? Probably, yeah. Yeah, because he's bonkers, isn't he?
Tim.
He is?
Well, I think Trump is detestable. And somebody should do something with his hair plant. But I like to think that it's a wig because I like to think no one's had that hair beforehand. But no, he wouldn't have said that. He is the Yoda, and not a very good Yoda. He's the Yoda before it's been voiced by Frank.
He's Jabba the Hutt.
Jabba the Hutt. Do you know Jabba the Hutt in the first film was just normal sized? It sort of expanded
until his second term.
No. Yeah, into a second term and a third term, and then it just keeps going.
Is it true or false?
Disturbing.
Is it true or false?
It's false. Is it false?
It is false.
Oh, I'm rubbish at this.
2-0. Tim, you're leading the roast team. Okay, question three, Tim.
Yes.
NHS hospitals in the north of England are now offering free supermarket vouchers. True or false?
I assume that's false because I don't think, you know, where would they? So is there another bureaucrat who's been employed to produce these free supermarket
vouchers?
It's been
produced, from my knowledge, from the hospital.
Well, then someone's got to do it. So that's another person being paid for something which is absurd.
If it's true, could be false.
If it's true, I don't think it's true because I don't think the NHS can offer enough to keep things going as it is, let alone. Actually, it's possibly true. It's possibly true to try and give the impression of largesse. I don't know.
Well, health standards and prevention. So is it true or false? I need a single answer from you, Tim. I'm thinking you're saying it's
Wes Streeting wants to prevent problems rather than cure them. He's going to end, if he's offering free supermarket sweep, he's not going to prevent or stop. He's not going to prevent or cure. So I think it's false, but I really don't know.
I think it's false. Sal?
I think it's false because they're far too busy renaming food banks into larders and trying to make them acceptable.
We're definitely going to have a long conversation about that later. But yes, It is false.
Last question. Thank God for that. In a way.
The UK is the only G7 country that fell into recession in the third quarter of 2024.
Don't know. Yes, let's say. Yeah, I'd guess. I have no idea.
Tim?
I think the answer is yes, because Russia is no longer part of G7.
Correct. I think so it is true. Well done, everyone. Mm-hmm. Tim, you've succeeded. And it is true. I think, yes. It's funny. I think there were even stats showing that Russia was doing better economically than the UK at one point in the last, like,
well,
during,
Putin
during
is
the
probably
war.
Doing better. Putin is probably doing better
he's
than...
He's got a better economy with the billions that he's away.
I mean, he has serious problems. If you've seen the photograph of him recently, he's clearly forgotten his false teeth. But have a look at the photograph.
Let's go into the intro.
No.
Welcome everyone to the Sunday Roast. I have a new co-host this week. Professor Tim, could you please introduce yourself?
Hello. I don't have very much to say, really. I'm not here at the moment. I'm in Turkey. So hello from a sojourn en route, and I'm in the sort of penumbra of a trip abroad. I'm in a darkened room. I'm not quite sure why. I think it's to enhance the light.
Oh dear, Sal, can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Sal, known as Badass Mother on Twitter and socials. I campaign against poverty and for an increase in disability benefits. I've been ill most of my life. I've ended up chronically ill with invisible disabilities. And I've got a lot to say.
I've already, from that true and false round, I've already had that impression. got a slight hint there. So our first topic is going to be Ukraine. Tim, what is going on with this photo, which is now in front of our audience? I didn't notice this, but what did you notice in the photo?
Well, he looks toothless, doesn't he? I mean, he looks as if he's not got his false teeth in. Now, I'm not suggesting that Mr. Putin is dentally deprived. I'm sure Mr. Putin has a very fine set of teeth, but they're in the Smeg fridge with the rest of the body decaying in a lump of ice, as beautifully described by SVR.
SVR is the Foreign Intelligence Service Agency of Russia. Its director reports directly to Putin.
In October 2023, which describes not only his heart attack, but also his death. No, the resurrection of Putin, because mainstream media doesn't like the idea of Putin dead, is simply the hard work of a lot of very earnest doppelgangers. And this particular doppelganger has clearly forgot his gnashers. A toothless Putin. I don't know whether it's extraordinary. What is Putin doing here? He is channeling his inner Zelensky. Mr. Zelensky has got inside Putin rather like one of Matt Hancock's wayward HB pencils. And you're back into Zelensky, and there we get it. Fully clothed, but without the teeth.
The guy in the background looks really freaked out, like he's seen something so horrific. He's like,
maybe the teeth are exiting backwards. I don't know.
So much possible in Russia. Much. What is
so
the old expression?
Surgery.
In Russia, you don't watch TV. TV watches you.
You know, what we've got to remember now is that the whole Ukraine campaign, we in Britain foolishly think or foolishly have thought for a long time that Putin's propaganda is about us. It's not. It's about the huge swathe of Russia. It's an enormous country, and everybody, I promise, in their houses or their flats, in their little Brezhnev flats, everybody is sitting there with the television on or doing the housework with the television on, and this diet of filth is coming through the television like unwanted flatulence. It's disturbing the amount of stuff. I got caught on Russian television on a number of occasions, and I was interviewed. I'd done some lectures on the ethics of journalism in the, I think, the Presidential Academy or something like that. And I really enjoyed doing them. And then one of my students asked me if I would be interviewed on a national TV show, a national TV channel called NBC or something. And now I say it doesn't sound quite right, but I can't remember what the channel was. Anyway, I thought there was something odd going on. And I think the third or the fourth time that this happened, I asked the cameraman if I could record the interview while I was doing it on my mobile phone. And then I was back in Russia for the actual broadcast, which was that night or the following night. And I watched it and I had my recording and my voice was saying stuff which I had never said. I was being dubbed with fake information. And so what they were, it was irrelevant. It didn't matter very much. I was talking about Mrs. May. I could have said anything. But in fact, this was trialing out their systems for AI. You know, Russian news is often presented by an AI entity, by a person that doesn't exist.
I
because
had
they're so worried
no.
about people coming in behind them and holding up flags to say support Ukraine, which of course
Yes.
the majority of people in Russia do. They're all suppressed, and the news and the TV is that organ of suppression. And for Putin, I use the term loosely, to appear on TV in Kursk. First of all, do we know it's really he's really in Kursk? Do we know it's really Putin? Well, the second question we can give a very firm answer to. No, it's not really Putin. Is he really in Kursk? Well, it's just an actor. You know, they're disposable. And we've got another five back in the Kremlin.
Can I ask then what makes you think Putin is has been doppelganged? And there's plenty of historical evidence to show that, and I'm pretty sure we knew that he definitely had a couple of doppelgangers when he was alive, if he's no longer alive.
Absolutely,
So
absolutely.
what makes you
And you
think
know,
that?
it may be that he is alive. He's just too terrified to wriggle out of whatever bunker he's in. I think the bunker is a Smeg fridge. Somebody else may eventually decide the bunker is a concrete room. It doesn't matter. What we know, among other things, is that he's got his own version of Kremlin rooms in his little dacha, so he can replicate the image of being in the Kremlin at any time, even when he's safe. Why do I think that he's a doppelganger? For example, when he visited China, his cheekbones were moving. His cheekbones moved. Cheekbones don't move.
So you think someone actually broke the face in order to
Yeah, and
reconstruct it?
it's like a sort of Bela Lugosi or a what? Well, it wasn't Bela Lugosi. Who was the fellow who played the Phantom of the Opera first? I can't remember his name now.
Michael
But he
Crawford.
had the no, way back in the 1920s in silent films,
Oh, wow.
Lon Chaney, and he puts bits of plastic inside his cheeks to create fake cheekbones, and that I
Wow.
think is what they've done to these doppelgangers, because Putin has quite high cheekbones and then these quite puffy cheeks. It's a very Slavic face. It's quite pretty, really. And when you caricature these people, you realize that their bone structure. And I've caricatured Putin many, many times. In fact, at one point, I was so excited about his walk because he walks in a strange way. He walks if he's got something in his trousers. He hasn't. He's just got into a habit of walking like that because he's got into a habit of walking with a gun in a holster. He doesn't have a gun in a holster. He's just a creature of habit. And he's got this sort of macho posture. So I animated his walk about 2 or 3 years ago, and then I animated the walk of Trump. I did little caricatures of them on top. But I thought the walk itself was so interesting. You can tell so much about a person's personality by the way that they walk. Sometimes if I'm confused about something, I get behind them and I try and imitate their walk as they're walking. I don't want them to catch me. But people walk with a particular rhythm. And Putin is very distinctive. So his doppelgangers will have been trained how to walk like him. Limp more, limp, limp, or I'll beat you. And he's got this slight limp. And Trump, I mean, Trump is extraordinary. But
In the
anyway,
way he walks.
in the way he walks, in the way he moves, in the way he wears, Trump wears clothes which are slightly too big for him in an attempt to make himself look bigger and look more comfortable. Putin wears clothes which are slightly too small for him, I think. So there's contrast there. But both of
Yeah,
them are
it was pretty
fascinating
horrific
figures.
seeing him get out into his golf outfit, and you were like, wow, the suit makes such a difference in how he looks. It's almost incredible. He looks so much younger in the suit than he does when he gets into his t-shirt and pants. I mean, what is he, 78, 79 now?
I'm not sure, but Trump looks magnificent.
In a
And
suit.
even admitting the comb over and I like to think that it's a wig, but that's just my entertainment. I mean, the reality is it's clearly a hair transplant, and it's very good.
What do you think of what's going on in Ukraine, Sal?
I am not entirely up on that geopolitics because it seems very but I'm not as into it as Tim is. Obviously, it's not my baby, but for me, it seems to be a proxy war that America have been behind the whole time. I could be wrong, I don't know. But it does seem to be that all they really wanted was the minerals and the gas and oil that Ukraine have the whole time, and to give Trump, not sorry, not Trump, Putin access to it all. That seems to be the overriding purpose of it.
You think it's all
But yeah.
financial in the America? I mean, there's plenty of
Oh God,
play
yeah.
about America and the
I mean,
CIA getting involved.
there's literally nothing else that these insane people want. They've won life. They have got nothing better to do. than to try and be more powerful and richer than the next man. That's all it is. It's insane people that have a pathological greed. That's it.
So it's like a splitting
I know
of
it's a
the
very
planet
simplistic
between...
way of doing it, but they're not rational, stable human beings. During my recovery, I've taken a very deep dive into psychology and human behavior and sociology. And of course, that trips into geopolitics and just trying to figure out how people work and why we're in such a mess right now.
Yeah.
Because it's insane and it's everywhere. It's pretty much across the globe, but you know, by and large, it's not just us. We just seem to be the epicenter. I've been saying for years, while people have been calling me a conspiracy theorist, which they're not doing anymore, that it felt like we were a pilot for something for the last 15 years. It felt
And
like
what
we were an experiment because it was so insane. Because I don't want to take your order out, but with the Cameron and Osborne austerity plan, they knew exactly what was going to happen when they rolled that out. They knew people were going to die in great numbers. They were told, but they did it anyway.
I've always been a bit mixed about that because I know that the original Harvard Review that came out, I think it was in the 1990s, which was talking about the ideas of austerity and slimming down the state and how you could do it in such a way would benefit a country. I'm 90% sure that most governments that followed austerity followed that paper thinking that it could be done in a positive way. I would also say that for whatever reason, I think it was a student about 5 to 9 or 10 years later went over that paper and went over the data, trying to figure out how he could extend on that paper and make a new one and update it after 10 years, figured out that the paper that all these governments have been following had falsified all the data to make it work
poverty,
as a theory, which
poverty
is...
has never made anybody better or more productive in the history of man, ever.
And so when you're talking about Ukraine, I think there's an element of Putin being a dictator, element of the CIA getting involved and spooking him enough that he starts going wild. But he's definitely all out for Russia and grabbing territory and leaving a legacy. I think you've got Chechnya, you've got Georgia, you've got Syria, you've got Ukraine. And it's interesting because you said psychological profiling. That's how I make a lot of my predictions with what I think will happen. And with Putin, it's definitely been that. And you're right, the area that he coincidentally took wasn't just Russian, but it's also full of minerals. And we know that because Zelensky has said on a map, oh, these are all the resources, but a large chunk of it is actually in the area that's been captured by Ukraine, by Russia.
Who'd have thought?
By Russia.
Yeah. Tim, I'm going to ask something that you touched on. We were talking about it in the last episode. We were talking about this thing. I think we've coined it as tennis court theory. The issue of the West, and it's the idea that you have two tennis players, you've got a court net separating them, and they're playing against each other. And I guess it touches on what Sal said. You've got this element of like psychological profiling. I feel that the West isn't really doing a good enough job of really thinking about Putin's psychological outlook.
Not at all.
You would
all.
Agree with that, wouldn't you?
And the absolutely, we have enormous resources ourselves. One of the key resources is our ability to deal and pitch to the camera, and we're not doing it. We should have been countering Russian propaganda from day one. We haven't. We thought it was for us, and we didn't realize that our job is to be sending out responses in Russian to counter the rubbish which is being which for 3 years now has dominated Russian television and media. Number one. Number two, the I don't subscribe to the idea that this is an American plot. I don't subscribe to the idea that America started the war. But I do think America's hand is very much in it, and it's in it for what it can grab. And certainly in the Trump manifestation, that is hugely evident, and it's repulsive. I was in Russia when Putin took over Crimea, and that seemed to me to be fundamentally wrong. And I was surprised at how quickly the maps were adjusted in, for example, my university to reflect the acquisition. I mean, literally, it was overnight. The map had been repainted next on the wall next to the rector's office. And it was a sort of relief map. It was very beautiful. It had been repainted overnight.
Do you think that'd been pre-planned, or it was the fear of Putin that you instantly want that you had people doing that?
I think we can speculate about it. I think there is fear of Putin, and I think people in Russia are terrified of opening their mouth.
Could I just ask themselves... Tim?
Tell me.
So could I just ask what your take is on the Krasnov story, the theory that Trump has been a Russian agent for 38 years, named Krasnov?
I don't think he knows. If he is a Russian agent, he doesn't know. I mean,
that sounds more realistic.
but he's the expression useful idiot, and he's very useful. I have this awful feeling. I remember when I came back to Russia after taking on Farage, and the people around the university they couldn't get enough of me, and it was terribly flattering. And I thought suddenly they think I'm a useful idiot because none of them could possibly be endorsing Farage. They just think I'm there to create chaos, and they like that. And that was when my eyes opened, I think. My eyes opened in many ways over the period of taking on Farage.
The irony, of course, being that's who Farage is.
Farage is, exactly. Mm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean these people know what they are. You have to be particularly perspicacious and self-aware to know that you are an idiot. And that's a start. I know I'm an idiot, but now I now I have moved beyond that point. I hope.
We all have our moments, though, don't we?
Oh yeah,
we do.
Oh, we do.
And you know the word idiot. The word I was always amazed when I lived in Greece, and I remember somebody saying idiotiko, and I thought they're being rude to me. And then I did something. Idiotiko means individual. So to be idiot is to be an individual.
Wow.
So if we go back to the original word, that is what we aspire to be. We aspire to be the best version of ourselves. That is to be idiotico, idiot. And so I embrace my idiocy now.
It's the only thing you can do for sanity's sake.
This is turning into a Monty Python sketch.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
No.
It's a compliment.
It's good. It reminds me of, it's almost Python-esque in the, it's good. It's good comedy. I mean,
Did I answer the question you asked me? I can't remember.
I want to just pin it down a bit more. You sort of did. I think I just want to get a little bit more dissected, because what is the difference in the Russian mentality to the Western mentality then? And I think let's go specific, because we could talk about all sorts of things. But let's talk about within the Ukraine war. What do you think the difference is in the way these two sides are looking at everything?
There's
so I can give an
Russia
example
in this Ukraine. Go on.
So for example, like the trade sanctions that they put on Russia, and as much as it did do damage, it wasn't the thing that you needed to be able to deal with someone like Putin. And
no,
I
and,
went. It's such
and more
a,
than that. It was.
Yeah. I was just gonna. I'll just finish off and say it felt like such a Western approach. If we hit you financially, that'll teach you a lesson, because everyone hates their finances being hit. Or it was a case of, you know, everyone's talking about peace at the moment. And it's like, that's a Western philosophy towards the world and its outlook, which is beautiful. But at the same time, you're dealing with someone who doesn't give a shit, who literally doesn't look at it like that. And you're going, how are they not seeing that this is why we call it tennis court theory. I'm calling the turn, by the way. But go on. That's the type of thing we're talking about.
You mentioned finances. How on earth can you think that Putin and his oligarch friends are going to be stung by a financial strike against the country when they've been squirreling away and hiding their finances, as Navalny very, very, very brilliantly pointed out, with building palaces and stuff? So if your finances are hidden, you're not going to be frightened about people going after the finances that are not hidden. They belong to other people. You don't care about them anyway. If Putin cared about Russia, he would care about the people of Russia. He doesn't. He suppresses them. He's frightened
of them,
maybe. If they rose up, that would be a problem. As for peace, I think you've spelt the word wrongly. It's the pieces of Ukraine that Putin wants, much like the pieces of Ukraine that Trump wants. It's pieces, not peace. I mean, there could even be another spelling of that word. And that's all over Ukraine, and Putin's been doing it for 3 years. But no, I think it's not specifically about the difference between Russian mentality and Western mentality. Let's face it, the majority of Russians are Europeans and are our friends. And that's something that people forget. When I say bad things about Putin, the Putinists, the Putin propagandists, the trolls on YouTube come out and say that I'm Russophobic. I couldn't be further away from Russophobia. I am frightened of Putin. I'm Putophobic, but I'm not Russophobic, and I'm not a Russian hater. I'm a Russian lover. I love Russia, and I loved being in Russia, and I loved the the absurdities of Moscow, particularly. You know, you walk around a concrete block and there's suddenly a little Russian church, and it's simply charming. The Russian people walking through Moscow looking like death warmed up, and they welcome you into their apartment. And not only do they start smiling, but all the grey clothes come off and they're suddenly multicoloured, wearing the most extraordinary things that they, you know, they've discovered punk. And it's astonishing, the transformations. But Russia, I think we stand a better chance of a broad European community from Ireland to... We should definitely have a broader European community from Ireland to Istanbul, but I think that broader European community could stretch as far as Russia. The difference, I think, frankly, is between that community and the USA. We have so little in common except for a language, and that language is bastardized by the Americans anyway. They don't understand the weight of vowels. I like Americans, but I would keep them at arm's length at the moment, particularly if Trump is going to be representing them.
That would also include the NHS. Segue.
How do you get from the NHS to... How do you
America
get from
wants to,
Trump to the
by
NHS?
By the looks of it, Trump wants to get involved in that if we want a trade deal with him.
Well, they already have. They signed contracts with Palantir, haven't they?
Some of the NHS... I don't think it's all, is it? I think it's some of the NHS hospitals have... Go on, Sal. Tell me, how is the NHS doing these days?
I don't even know where to start, to be honest. I spoke to Tim before the recording about how when you go abroad to foreign hospitals in some countries, you realise just how the NHS isn't quite what this government will tell you it is. There is a lot of improvements that can be made, and this is not to denigrate any of the staff working for them, because those people, God love them. We seem to be in an era that I refer to as a capitalist psychosis, where certain personality types will take advantage because if they don't, somebody else will. And that applies to everything, everywhere, including hospital contracts. It's, you know, look at the pandemic, look at COVID, masks from mates. And the Tories spoffed, what, £1 trillion up the wall during COVID? Most of it did not benefit the people of the UK. Sorry, it benefited about that many people in the UK who are now incredibly wealthy. I don't want to divest from the NHS chat, but I've made notes about benefits.
But it's connected.
Really.
Like Michelle Moan.
Well, she's disappeared, hasn't he? Mr. Moan got off with his tax scam in Spain, didn't he?
What was that?
Because,
that. Can you tell our audience?
Oh, that was just after the pandemic when we discovered that she'd bought a yacht and paid her kids off with all this money. And they then buggered off to Spain because I can't remember his name, Peter, is it Peter something? Whatever. Mr. Michelle Moan was... caught with some tax scams in Spain, which I believe he got off with, and then they've just disappeared into the ether and never to be mentioned again, which is, it just, given that apparently this country is so broke, makes no sense to anybody, especially when they are now deliberately targeting, again, it's either immigrants or people on benefits. We are the scourge of the earth and apparently the reason for all the problems, which we are categorically not.
And specifically disabled people.
Well, yeah, very specifically.
It is shocking, isn't it?
What's shocking is how few people realise that since Cameron and Osborne brought in austerity, notwithstanding it's been bolstered by the pandemic, but over and above the average death rate, over 1 million people have been deliberately killed because the benefits bill is too big. No. What's happening is that you've created an environment which makes people ill and sick. You've made people have to work more than one full-time job because the companies they work for aren't paying them enough. So that then has to be topped up by the state, which makes no sense to anybody, because if anyone had a small to medium business and that was the case, that would be called an unviable business. Pick a lane. Pick a bloody lane. You can't have it all the ways that suit you. But they do. And they spent... the propaganda we've experienced over the last decade is just off the charts. It's beyond, people should be in prison for life for dereliction of duty. Their job is to look after the country and the people within it. And they are not doing that. They haven't done that for a long time. They've looked after the top earners, the people they think keep the economy going, when in fact, that is an absolute nonsense. When you pay people on the lowest rung of the economy money. Do you know what they do with that money? They don't send it offshore because they haven't got the money to do that. They buy stuff. So every time the government come out with a figure about disability benefits, everybody should automatically take 20% off that figure, because do you know what? All we have to do, all we get to do, is buy goods and services to keep ourselves alive, which have VAT on them. So we pay tax. You know, people don't take that into account. We're just shirkers. No, we're not. We're absolutely not. There are people who just can't work. There are people who are born with disabilities that are just not compatible to work. There are people like me who work themselves into what should have been an early grave and have ended up just beside themselves. The effect on mental health to everybody across the board. Why is everybody getting suddenly ill? Oh, they must be making it up. No, they're not. If you take into account Maslow's pyramid of human need, that really should be taught in schools. The absolute foundation of that pyramid, I've got it written down here. We need oxygen, we need food, we need water, we need shelter, we need clothing, right?
Yep.
Look at all the homeless people. You're homeless. You're nowhere in the history of the world has poverty made anybody well or better. What it has done is given people far more challenges than they can cope with in the modern world. Now we have the internet and everything's faster and quicker and more on demand. And it's an absolute, we've lost sight of humanity and human need completely, because we're so interested in making money for the wealthy. Look at trickle down economics.
A bit doesn't like, work.
It's just a nonsense.
It doesn't work.
No, it just fills the top glass. They send all the money overseas to hide. And I'm going to tell you now, anybody who's been born in this country and has benefited from living in the UK, who then either moves abroad to avoid avoids tax completely, however they do it, they're traitors. They are absolute traitors. They are taking money out of this country, out of the needs of this country, that we need services to run smoothly. When's the last time services ran smoothly?
Probably not since Labour. And there's a lot of evidence to support that. I mean, there was, I think it's the Commonwealth Fund. And I saw a couple of other surveys suggest that, I think 2010, I think even a couple of years after that, when they pumped a bit more money in due to COVID, or when we were just coming out of austerity, showed that people in the UK were voting for the NHS to be number one. And that's also including the Commonwealth Fund. Now, I'm not saying it's through the board, but you definitely see a decline as soon as austerity kicks in. And it was interesting. I've got to touch on something that you brought up. You were saying how I call it capitalist selection. It's like some sort of weird formed, you know, like how, sorry, you know how like in the 1930s, things were like with certain nations, they were going, it's all about genetics. And that's how you select someone. And that's how, and like, if they're not good genetically from their perspective, I mean, it's an excuse, they would be gotten rid of. I had a feel, I coined a new term, which I felt was coming through, especially with the limited disability benefits that came through under the Conservative Party. There was an element of capitalist selection. Like Dominic Raab famously said, I don't believe in, was it human rights? I think he said on camera. Like, I don't believe in social rights. I don't believe in economic rights. I'll play the clip. But it's almost like instead of genetic selection, it's capitalist selection. And if you're not making enough money to survive, my feeling is that you don't deserve to survive. And I'm not saying that's all the way through the Conservative Party. I know you really want to jump in. I'm not saying that's all the way through the Conservative Party, but there are core elements within the Conservative Party that I think believe in that. Raab would be one because of what he said. We could look at how all the people that have attacked people on disabilities or the poor. And I think they go, well, if you're not good at capitalism, you deserve what you get, I think would be a more nuanced way of saying it. Sal, before I bring you in, Tim, I can see you shaking. I can't tell what you're doing. Tim, what are your thoughts? And I'll bring you back in, Sal.
I'm not shaking. No. Two things. One way in which is capitalist conspiracy. I'm trying to use your language here, by the way.
Who, me? Works. I said capitalist selection.
Capitalist selection works.
Yeah, you're selected based on you're selected to survive based on how good you are.
Human worth. Capitalism. It's about human worth, and that's the whole problem. Right.
So one way it works, or in practice, is by using, but is by the invention of the complaints department. So nobody who is making money out of you actually has to take responsibility for the damage that they do, because they have a complaints department to manage you. And to manage to hide the problems, to transfer those problems. So the people who are making money out of other people don't ever need to face the reality of what they're doing. Dominic Raab, I'm so pleased you mentioned him, because Dominic Raab is one of my pet peeves. Dominic Raab, I mean, what would he say about somebody who shirks their duty? For example, maybe sunning themselves on a beach in Khania when the Taliban is driving into Kabul. You know, I think it's ideas about responsibility. The idea of responsibility has been obliterated or masked by the idea of making money. And that's very worrying. I don't know whether we've got to that point or whether people are trying to get us to that point, but I think we have to keep pulling back and saying responsibility is more important than making a quick pile of money. Now, on the subject of Wes Streeting's plans, now I know that there are concerns about the revival of austerity, and I have serious problems with what he's talking about, but right at the top of his list is a plan to axe NHS England. If you've been to NHS England, this is one of the useless buildings in the middle of London, filled with people who don't do any serious work.
That's mean.
Of course it's mean, and I repeat it. The majority of people in NHS England are simply guarding the backs of other people. You know, they're on various floors, and they all meet in the canteen and trade information. And you wonder why, as an ordinary patient, you can't move forward. And if by chance you're a whistleblower, your life is over. It's not that they will stop. It's not that they will silence you. They will do everything to destroy your career and to destroy your sanity. And I've seen it again and again. NHS England is something that needs to be severed. It's not 7,000 bureaucrats who need to go. It's the entire lot. Because when you go to a hospital or when you go to your GP, it's not these bureaucrats who do the work. They're busy planning how next to muzzle a whistleblower or how next to muzzle somebody who's trying to sue the NHS for malpractice. No. The people who actually do the real work of the bureaucracy are the overworked doctors and nurses in the GP surgeries, in the hospitals. And then why are we surprised when they misgender you or something? They misgendered me. I thought it was hilarious. They called me Mrs. I shouldered it quite pleasantly. I thought it was a positive, really. You know,
I would say the statistics I'll bring you in a second, Sal. The statistics I saw. I can't remember what year it was done, but it showed that actually, and this is only on NHS management costs, not NHS England. I don't know if the two have been separated in the study, but they're some of the lowest in the world for running something as similar. I mean, one of the highest is the United States. So I might push back a little bit because I'm going, that should include NHS England as part of the managerial costs. So I'm not, it sounds like, and I agree with the whistleblower stuff though, I think that needs to be restructured so you can come out. Otherwise, how can you improve when you find problem or fault? Like, I've worked in enough industries go on.
Yeah. You know, it's part of the contract that you signed to be in the NHS, that if you see something wrong, you're supposed to call it out.
Yes.
Whistleblower is encouraged. Whistleblowing is encouraged. But when the whistleblowers actually do their job, they are destroyed. They are pummeled into the ground. And years go by before they can actually rise again. And they don't. You know, all you have to do is Doctors for Justice or something like that. There are groups of people who have been shattered by NHS England. Shattered. And these people are the sort of people that we really need working for us. We don't need another pen pusher. We need another doctor, another nurse. And, you know, we are actually training more doctors and more nurses at the moment. Mm. I'm sounding like Suella Braverman, aren't I? We are training more doctors and more nurses at the moment than we ever have before. And yet we're not retaining them, working in the NHS and then being paid a pittance to complete those last 2 years. And they go abroad where they're actually going to be valued because they have been so well trained in our universities.
You see, I would say that, like, I agree with the retention, and teaching is the same problem. The stats came out, it's the lowest retention rate of teachers on record, which means that it's the public sector isn't competing enough with the private sector to retain these staff. That's part of it. I'd still say, I don't think it's necessarily just the management. I think it's the investment and the same level of investment.
I entirely agree, Alex. It's not just the management, but the management is a major problem. When I look around and I look at the CEOs who are running hospital trusts, I know some of them. I know some of them personally. They were stupid when they were small. They're still stupid. And yet they've got these top positions. They are paid more than somebody who has got his scalpel poised over you, or her scalpel poised over you, ready to do some serious surgery. Who do you want to pay more? Somebody who's pen pushing, or somebody who's about to
save
slice into you?
Yeah.
You don't have that in football. The players are paid more than the actual CEOs.
We need to make absolutely sure, fundamentally sure, that the people who are doing the real work, that's the nurses, the doctors, the cleaners, are paid significantly more than the bureaucrats.
Go on, Sal.
Now, I just wanted to ask, because it's something that I've been sort of sitting on for quite a while now. What do we call it when a government targets a specific demographic of people, knowing that the end result is going to be death?
Persecution.
And then they kill lots of people. I thought it was eugenics.
You could call it that as well.
It's also... It's also right. Brutality, so, isn't it?
It is, but it's 15 years of systematic psychological torture of the most vulnerable group in the country that has resulted in the last statistics I had, I think, went to 2021, and that was over 1 million people then. And they know exactly what they're doing. They demonize us, and they, you know, it's like I was saying before, it's either immigrants or it's us. Apparently, we're the problem of all the world's issues, and we're not, because you know what money is? We don't mine it, we don't fish for it, we don't grow it, it's not blood, it's not oxygen, it's a man-made system of trade for services and goods that, do you know what, human people made up. The economic system is a man-made system that they can change at will whenever they like, as we know when you go back to the Bretton Woods system.
The Bretton Woods system was a global money system set up after World War II to bring stability to the world economy. Countries agreed to fix their currencies to the US dollar, and the dollar was tied to gold.
They had to change that because they ran out of gold to wage money against, or weight money against, rather. Yeah. And then what happened, I know it was a Nixon thing, but we've got to change it all now. We're going to have a new economic system. So you can mold it any way you want. But what they've done is they've exclusively weighted it towards the wealthy, which is why when inflation comes along, people like me, who are literally everything we get goes, you know, the minute we get our money, it's gone because we've paid our bills, bought our food, and that's your lot. Whereas, so when something gets put up in price, to us, it becomes more expensive because we're still living on the same wage. But the wealthy people who've got all the investments relative to their wealth, inflation makes everything cheaper for them because their wealth has gone up so much relative to the price of the goods that have gone up. And it's just an insane nonsense.
I've got a stat for you. I think between 2012 and 22, the average house price in England rose 57%.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to guess what wage growth went up by?
It didn't.
It did go up.
I don't think it did.
Between 12 and 22, it did go up.
Okay, 0.2%.
I think 0.2. Tim? Wage growth compared to housing price.
At the very most? 4%?
27%, but half.
All right.
What?
Yeah.
Wages?
More than I thought.
Yeah. Medium annual earnings for full-time employees went from 26,000 to 33, which is a 27% increase. But housing prices went from an average of about 100. This is just in England. Housing prices went up from 175,000 to 275,000. It's the bigger picture. It's all this stuff that needs fixing that's not being fixed. So it's like, if your wages aren't going up with house prices, you get priced out of the market, which means that people that own the property have more control. I was checking to see if our housing stock was as bad as Europe. It's actually considered not too bad across the whole of the UK. I'm a bit surprised at that because I've seen a lot of Victorian housing. I mean, it doesn't even have concrete floors. It's mud. And you've got floorboards protecting you from the mud underneath. Our housing stock, I'm sure, must need...
I mean, that's the other issue we've got. Since time immemorial, the short-termism of governmental thinking is insane. Yeah. It's all short-term band-aids. That's what everything is. We need a complete reset of the system, including the political system, because we have a duopoly nonsense my entire life, and life is far too short for people to be punished like this.
And yet, I wonder how much this is related to the Victorian era, this sort of... I felt it. So my mum was in a wheelchair, and you just noticed all these things, like she couldn't get access into certain shops. She couldn't go around with the pavement because pavements aren't designed for people on wheelchairs, you know, it's difficult to get elevators, and you know, sometimes you sort of get it because like the building's listed or something, but still you're like, it wasn't just like the one-off random rare antiquated building. You just felt it all the way through. There was no social support, or very limited. And if you compare it to other countries like France, you can get a care worker to come in and they'll do anything you want, whether it's to help with the child, not someone.
Sorry, that's an anathema to me.
So in France, if you have a kid, the French government will allow you to bring, they will bring in a worker to help you with the kid, whether it's cleaning, washing, cooking, anything you need. Whatever you need, they come in. Might be for an hour or 2 hours a day, but can you, like, that doesn't exist here. Like, there's no help. And it's like, I'll just go back to the point. Do you think this is left over from the Victorian era, this sort of disdain for the disabled? And I find it odd as well, because I keep thinking of Stephen Hawking. You couldn't have got someone who got more support, but it was only as a result that he had such a brain.
He could afford it. Yeah, he could afford it, couldn't he?
I don't think he did afford it. I think the University of Cambridge jumped in and gave him all the support and rebuilt the house and gave him wheelchair and everything.
Oh, I'm sure when you go to Oxford and Cambridge, you get all the support you need. Mm. Everywhere else, you're stuffed. It's my theory that the wealth transfer over recent years has been so unbelievable. Like the 1% hold about 90% of the wealth or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's a bursting bubble, that. And it's no bloody wonder. Because they're all pretending, you know, money is oxygen and there's nothing we can do about it. It's just how it is. Well, it just isn't, is it? That's an absolute nonsense. My theory is that they know, because of the introduction of the internet, and it happened, the printing press in the 30 Years' War had the same effect. Everybody's got onto them and we know what they're doing and we know it's a nonsense and they know that we know. And I think they're scratting to literally suck up every last bit of money that they can before their bubble bursts and we go, right, we've had enough and we all stand up. That's what I think this is. And I think it's been perpetuated by the internet and the fact that we're all now connected.
Mm.
And we, you know, I can speak to somebody in any other country like that and go, have you seen what's happening here? And they go, have you seen what's happening here? And they don't like that, do they? Because we now know that they are propagandizing us to hell.
Yeah.
And we're all sat here going, you lot are absolutely mental. Because they are. They're absolutely sociopathic. They are. We have, because sociopaths and psychopaths don't care about other people, they will climb on top of other people to get to the top of the pyramid to hold power. It's how human psychology works. The people who won't say anything and sit still are the ones who get climbed all over.
I'm going to push by the people who are. Do you find that analogy fair towards Starmer and the Labour government?
I think Starmer and the Labour government are behaving very oddly. Mm. And I think they're trying to do anticipate as many things that will be disturbing as possible and get them out of the way in the first year so they can spend the next 4 years being nice. I think they're wrong. I think they're fundamentally wrong. I would object to a Conservative government doing a lot of the stuff that the Labour government is doing. It's got nothing to do with the coloured flag of the political thing. It goes back to something that Thatcher said. Thatcher said there was a difference between freedom and equality. Now, one of the solutions to all the things you're saying, and that Sally's saying, is that we need more equality. Actually, what we need is more responsible freedom.
Need equity, not equality.
Well, I've never quite understood the difference between equity and equality.
Equality is everybody's got the same ladder. Everybody gets a ladder relative to their needs.
And I think you should then add and their abilities to use it. But yeah, equity may be what we're looking for, but equality is something we want to avoid. But how do you then distribute things according to equity is very difficult. I don't think there's a huge conspiracy to grab as much as the rich can. I think this is habit. A lot of people have got into the habit of not thinking responsibly. When you go back to the 19th century, so I'm coming back to the question you asked earlier, Alex. The 19th century. Are we in the 19th century? Yes, but we're in the 19th century without that patina of social responsibility. Because if you look at Birmingham, which is a city I know well, just down the road from where I am. Not at the moment, of course. Birmingham was built by businesses who had this sense of social responsibility, as was Manchester, as was Liverpool, really. These enormous public buildings put up to demonstrate that social responsibility. Yes, it wasn't perfect in any way, but now we've got money-making for the sake of money-making with no sense of responsibility at all.
Do you know that's how Roundtree and Cadbury got going?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
and the Roundtree Cadbury stuff,
Sorry, Tim.
Yeah, and the little communities of the Roundtree and Canterbury very much built up on the Quaker faith as well, and very good. But it was about this putting back into society because people had this sense of responsibility. I don't see that sense of responsibility at all now. And we go back to Raab sunning himself on Khanya, no responsibility.
Can I just make a little point while we've got time?
Mm-hmm.
To the disabled community who were so relieved to get rid of the Tories, as we know, I saw you on that night. It feels like Starmer and his clan of terrible people have turned up at the scene of the world's biggest multi-car pileup. And they've gone, oh, God, oh, these car manufacturers are going to need some investment because this is bad, this isn't it, right? Okay, first things first, invest in the car manufacturers, smashing, right? Anybody here need to get to work? Right, let's help the people get to work while people are dying and dead on the pavement. That's where we're at. And they are further going, oh, these dying and disabled people, they're making it difficult for everyone to get to work. Not a word of, we know what you've been through, we know what you've suffered, bear with us. Not a word of that, no. Which speaks volumes in and of itself. They just, and now they're doubling down on what the Tories did. And it's making the PIP process harder. I tried to kill myself because of my experience with the PIP process in 2019. I should be one of that number. And I'm not, which is why I'm sat here. But it's absolutely
Sal,
criminal.
Sal, I had three people come to me with the PIP.
80,000 people under the DWP have killed themselves. 80,000 people because of the psychological torture that they've deliberately been meting out.
Can I ask where that number came from? Because Coffey got the report and she refused to release it, didn't she?
Do you know what? I've got it saved. If I can find it on my bookmarks, I'll send it to you. I can't because I've got such a wonky brain. It was either 77 or 87, and I can't remember which it was. So, but I made a speech in 2021, bless Ian Byrne. I terrorised him into letting me talk because even the people who are protesting government cuts are not including disabled people. There's one at the end of March that I'm trying to get onto to speak at because they have no representation from the disabled community. And they want to talk about government change because what they're doing now is terrible. Well, hello, you know. I had a panic attack at an Enough is Enough protest. And it was horrible because people came up to me afterwards sobbing because it was the first time they'd heard anyone talk on their behalf.
Wow.
And the women who just, my daughters are hooked up to all this electrical equipment and I don't know how I'm going to manage to pay the bills, this poor woman. And there was just loads of people like that. And I...
Do you remember when...
I don't know why nobody cares.
Well, this is why I asked that question. Is it left over from the Victorian period? Is there something in that? And I think we talked about Raab earlier. Mm. He had that moment, didn't he? I think he was being interviewed by Victoria Derbyshire in a room full of people. Mm. And there was someone who was representing disabilities was saying, you're literally killing us.
Yeah.
And he started rambling on about the money tree. Which you were just, that's why I keep going back to this term I've coined called capitalist selection. If you are not providing money and you are therefore deemed or seen or thought to be a burden, you are therefore expendable.
Pointless. You are pointless to the system, which is an absolute nonsense. I now know. Now, I thought I'd never work again. I thought my brain was dying and I figured out, thanks to the weird Jordan Peterson, that I could solve that issue and got better myself. In some ways. And don't get me wrong, the trouble is they've got a half truth, haven't they? Because work can be good for some people and it can give them purpose.
Yeah.
But if you're shoehorning people into a job that they know, like I don't know until I wake up in the morning what I'm going to be capable of on any given day because I don't know which bit of my body's going to be playing up.
Mm.
And that is the truth for so many people. Giving up work finished me off. It was all, my job was who I was. You know, and it so because there's a half truth in there, they're literally doubling down on that whilst ignoring everything else. Work shouldn't be a necessity to be a human being with respect, but they've made it thus, which just drives the mental health issue off the cliff.
Yeah, it does.
And then when you go and try and get mental health treatment, all they want to do now for 5 years, I haven't been able to take pharmaceutical drugs because they burn my brain out.
Mm.
And still, I'll go to the GP, and obviously it's just a locum when you're lucky enough to get in. I can't remember the last time I had an appointment where somebody didn't try and push me back onto antidepressants. I don't bloody want them. You can't medicate people out of an environmental issue that you're deliberately creating. You just can't do it. There's no amount of therapy. It's going to change society.
But the therapy, the therapy doesn't even last with the NHS. They haven't got enough therapists. And then I know that you can only get therapy for 6 months, but it's not therapy. It's called something else.
Oh, but then you can go back after 3 months, at which point you've got to re-traumatize yourself by telling your entire backstory again. And then your therapy's finished.
So if you've got PTSD.
It's a nonsense. I've got CPTSD, so
I did wonder. I mean, I know they're doing trials. Are they doing trials with MDMA?
Psilocybin, you man. Oh, don't get me onto the drugs issue. Jeez, oh, most damaging drug on the entire planet is alcohol, and we demonize everything else. When in fact, drugs are a band-aid for people who aren't well. It's not the drug's fault. It's what's wrong with the person before they take the drug. We need to look after people better. We know this now. And still, here we are. Psilocybin is the best thing I've ever used. And it's so good that whilst it's still technically a category A drug, which makes no sense to anybody, pharmaceutical companies are synthesizing it.
Instead of growing it from
Explain
nature.
That. It's just a nonsense. And it's all to keep people fucked so they got somebody to blame. And it's criminal.
I would push back a little bit on that. I feel that the Nixon American anti-drug campaign was part of the cause of why there's such hesitation to even talk about drugs. And I'd agree, like, look, I've had many a good time on alcohol, but overall it seems to be pretty damn dangerous. I mean, if it turned up today, I refuse to believe that it'd be legalized, because I think it is that damaging, and it's just part
but
of
again,
culture.
Listen,
I mean, it's dying out, but...
Riddle me this. When has prohibition ever worked?
You could debate that with the USA, because one of the problems that the USA had, you got my history hat on here, sorry, Tim, I'm going to bring you in, I promise.
No.
So he's never been quiet.
I'm fascinated.
One of the things that happened with Prohibition that they brought in the States, which was a massive deal, and you need 75% of the states to agree. So that means there was a big mandate to get rid of alcohol. One of the problems turns out that alcohol being part of the drinking culture in the United States since George Washington, and it'd be normal for you to have a beer at lunch, breakfast, and dinner. But the alcohol rate would be, I think, 0.1, 0.3% for the beer that you're drinking, because you didn't have the processing methods that we do now. But because it became so ingrained in the culture and a natural thing, but you also had this masculinity attachment to it, you got to drink, otherwise you're not a man in the 1900s. You had this sort of blow up, but you also had the companies as well. If I wanted to set up a pub or a bar, as they call it in the States, you could get a loan from the brewing companies to set up the bar, and they would give you a loan for all the stuff for entertainment. So you get the pool table, you get the darts table. They even, you ever heard of the term, there's no such thing as a free lunch? Mm. Well, that actually came from that period, because what they would do, they would give you bar snacks, but they'd be heavily salted, which you still get today, right? You get salted peanuts, salted jerky, and everything else. But of course, that would cause you to, as you just pointed out, you drink more, so you spend more, and it wouldn't cost
that's
that
why pubs turn the heating up, innit?
There you go. Yeah. And it's, I mean, the casinos do the same thing now. But
casinos have no clocks. I used to be a croupier.
Yeah.
Find a clock. You won't find a clock in a casino because they don't want you to know how long you're in there.
Interestingly, Mark Zuckerberg hired people for casinos to figure out how to make Facebook more addictive, but we're going away from the alcohol topic. When you said the prohibition didn't work, so they then enacted prohibition. And what we can definitely say is, yes, it didn't stop it. And unfortunately, it created the mafia as we know it today.
It also created the NASCAR.
Did it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, because the bootleggers had to soup up their engines to get away from the authorities.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how NASCAR came into
okay,
convention.
That's pretty cool. But one of the things that they found out afterwards was that prohibition had actually caused people to reduce their drinking. So they weren't drinking throughout the day anymore. That old philosophy and outlook, which you had with George Washington and everyone up to that period of prohibition being introduced. Drinking around the clock, it actually did reduce alcoholism, because people then suddenly changed their patterns. So when you say there's a more nuanced way of looking at that, I would argue.
But they still had the speakeasies and stuff, didn't they? So it wasn't, you know, what I'm saying is when you make something illegal, you send it underground, don't you? Short-termism again, we never deal with the underlying issues of anything. And it's insane.
They did the same with tea. If you tax too much, tea become like
tea.
Yeah, tea under Pitt the Younger. He had to deal with smuggling with tea. People would smuggle it in from the continent because it wasn't taxed.
that's popular, but then you make it, you make things
make it popular.
Popular.
Yeah, it's a bit dangerous. Yeah. On that note, Tim, do you have a final thought before we disappear?
No, I'm stunned into silence. Silence, I rather like, by the way. You've got to remember, I was once a monk. So.
On that note, thank you to my lovely co-host Tim. Thank you to Sal. If you got this far in the video, we must have done something right. So hit that like and subscribe button. Bye for now. Hail the lamp.
All hail.
In this new world within the Twilight Zone that you now live, you either have two choices of transport. You can have a Boris bike controlled by an AI of Boris Johnson. He does the bumbling. He does crash you in sometimes and can cause a bit of chaos, can cause a bit of comedy. Or you can have a Tesla, but the only thing playing on the Tesla is Matt Hancock playing Ed Sheeran songs, but you have the entire back catalogue of Ed Sheeran. It's all played by Matt Hancock. Do you go for the Boris bike or do you go for the Tesla?
Can I take them both and drive them both off a cliff?
You can do whatever you want, but you can only have
I'll
one.
I'll do that. Oh, okay. I'll do that with the Tesla then.
You'd have more satisfaction.
Do you get Matt Hancock in the car as well, in physical form? It's like a stationary
car. Too far, Tim, too far.
Ooh, let me get into the car.
Can you imagine him in the back with a guitar?
Imagine him on the back controlling Ed Sheeran.
He'd have a ukulele, wouldn't he?
When I'm cleaning windows. I can't do that in a Frankie Howard voice.
Tim, in this new world, post-apocalyptic world, they offer you a job that you must take. You either get to host Britain's Got Surveillance, where you keep an eye on people as they walk around, and you are trying to keep an eye on people from doing bad things. If they do, you highlight it. Except you have to do it in a positive style. Jazz hands.
Oh, is that like highlighter on J.D. Vance?
On anyone doing anything bad, you get to... It's like 1984.
Okay.
So you do a highlighter.
Or, what's my alternative?
You have to do a daily come dine with me. But your guests are always Keir Starmer, a hologram of Margaret Thatcher, Boris Johnson, and Vladimir Putin.
I would have the come dine with me. I love the thought of having people to dinner. Would I be able to cook? Could I cook appropriate food?
You can do whatever you want. You can get them to cook for you as well, which is part of the game.
And what would a hologram of Margaret Thatcher eat? I'd have to find out her design. Oh, once I've got started, I'm not going to stop. Give me worms. Can you imagine Mrs. Thatcher with worms? I could have a worming pill. Oh, Vladimir Putin, you're also dead. Would you like one of these?
Privyet, privyet.
Oh, dear.